Today, we have with us Stephanie Drysdale, who has had an incredible career and one of the few women in senior positions in cybersecurity. She's the senior vice president at Prescient, specializing in executive data protection. This is Guy Marong, your host from the Cubic Lighthouse podcast. Hi, Stephanie. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Guy. How are you?
Doing fine. I'm so happy. We have been planning this for a while and finally it's happening. Now, instead of me introducing Stephanie, I think it's better for Stephanie to introduce yourself. And, you know, Stephanie Drysdale, I should say, to be clean and clear. You have a quite amazing career. And because it's so amazing, I'm happy that we agreed on making actually a video about yourself. So as a woman in cybersecurity, and we were, in that sense, as a channel, we are activists. We want to promote in a big way. So we'll do that in the near future. But, you know, before we go into the topic, maybe you can introduce yourself.
Well, thank you for your kind words, first and foremost. I am Stephanie Drysdale. I am a senior vice president of cyber at Prescient. Prescient is a global investigations and cybersecurity firm based in Chicago. We have offices all over, though. We have offices in LA, New York, DC, and Dublin, and assets in other places around the world. We specialize in a lot of things, but probably one of our most unique offerings is executive digital protection, which is assessing someone's online footprint and making sure that they know where the dangers are and protecting them. So at the core of it, we're here to just protect people.
Super. I mean, maybe before we dive a little bit into the main topic, which is this kind of executive data protection, you indicated already that you're based in the U.S. You have sort of a footprint in Ireland for Europe, I would imagine. Are you planning also to expand into Asia, or how is your presence over there?
You know, right now we have the ability to do what we need to do from where we're at. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say never. I would, you know, not rule it out.
Okay. Is there, I mean, again, before we dive in too deep, let's call it market. Do you see a market difference between the US or Europe and maybe Asia or your product?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of differences in terms of open source information. There are a lot of different laws and things that we, you know, keep in mind that we adhere to. There's also cultural differences in terms of sharing and accessing information. So, yeah, there are quite a few differences.
Okay, well, that will be an interesting aspect. I had always the impression that both the data are a little bit different, but maybe most similar. But the people's, you know, expectation or perception a little bit different. Obviously, you know, it's all about data protection for executives, and we're going to dive now into it. But before looking at the various aspects of it, I think it would be nice if you could share an example, which hopefully will serve us in this video to understand and analyze the different dimensions of what can happen and obviously what you can do about it. So I'm not sure anything comes to your mind. Which you wouldn't mind, of course, in an anonymized way you share with the audience.
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, I think that, you know, the way we look at data has historically been a little bit backward in terms of, you know, it's out there and there's nothing I can do about it. We have to remember that so much of what we do is sharing about ourselves. And that information is then compiled, repackaged, and redistributed. So if we can think of it in terms of me being the first line of defense for me, what am I sharing about myself when I'm on social media, where I'm going, what apps I'm using, those the things I sign up for, those are kind of the beginning of things. And then to go beyond that and say, okay, now that this information exists, if I search myself and not just Google, but other things as well, what can I find out about me? And what can I then go into remediation for and take down or employ, you know, if I have a very large digital footprint, if I'm an executive, what are my resources? Who are my resources for who I can reach out to and employ their help to take down some of these things? I think we just assume that it has to be there, and it doesn't. You know, we can take charge of a lot of our digital footprint, even though, you know, dark web criminals, they don't really respond well to takedown requests. We can't say, excuse me, sir, I'd love if you could take my credit card off of your, you know, your website. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, there's still plenty that we can do. And I think it's really important to know at least where you stand as far as your exposure.
So how long would it take to, does it take typically to do a research? You know, I come to you and, you know, I want your help. And, you know, how long, you know, obviously there are obvious things, less obvious things, automated, not automated, I'm not sure. But how much time do you need to actually have a full profile of someone?
Sure. I would say at minimum, it would take, you know, a week and a half to a couple of weeks. The larger your footprint is, the longer it would take, you know, the more information we're sifting through. If you're someone with a relatively small footprint, then that's somewhat simple. And if you're someone who is, you know, Fortune 5, right, you're going to take a lot longer. We're looking at every single thing that not only you're sharing on yourself, but what are other people saying about you? What are the tweets saying about you? Are there threats? Is someone putting doxing attempts out there to try to share your home address, your cell phone numbers, your family members? Those are things that we're going to look for and make sure that you know if it exists and how to mitigate that, or at least how to fortify on the physical end so that we're employing both physical as well as digital strategies for your safety and for your privacy, as well as the protection of your company and their assets.
So I guess in most cases, you not only find the data, but it will be by context. Obvious where it comes from, but sometimes you may find things on dark web, but very difficult to trace back. Or would you search also where it comes from, or just say, okay, anyway, it doesn't really matter what we have, that's what we have to manage?
No, we're finding the origins, or at least, you know, the locations of this information, and kind of showing, you know, where it was potentially exposed, how you can maybe prevent this type of exposure in the future, as well as how we can take seemingly innocuous amounts of information from one place or another place and then put it all together and weaponize it. We want people to understand how the information can be utilized. You know, it seems very simple. You have an email address, right? We all use email addresses for our work. But to say, you know, what can you do with that email address, or what can you do with just a cell phone number? Then when we start understanding social engineering, we start understanding phishing attempts and other kinds of scams that are out there, then we try to train the executive and their team to look out for these types of vulnerabilities going forward.
Okay. So I guess also, how about, you know, now suddenly you have lots of confidential data on your side.
Yeah.
And I assume that most people will want that service not only one time, but kind of continuous monitoring. So you will also accumulate lots of data, especially depending on the person you are checking. So obviously you take all kinds of measures to, in some sense, protect that data. That's what I assume. That's anything on, or any comment on new measures to protect my data?
Yeah, of course, no one wants to put a target on their head or whatever. You know, we try to keep information for short periods of time. We try to make sure that it's segmented in ways that, you know, doesn't let it get exposed through, you know, just normal day-to-day navigation. We keep as few eyes on things as possible. And we try to make sure that the information is passed off to the correct safe person as quickly as we can. Outside of that, you know, it's kind of like hot potato, right? You know, in a day and age of breaches, the whole goal is to not hold it so long that you have this trove of information for anyone. To your point with the ongoing monitoring, things like that, those are curated things that we, again, pass off, and we try to make sure that our data security stays super tight and that we're not putting anyone in any additional vulnerability. Our goal is always to protect and not to create additional vulnerability.
One question I had in my mind is, obviously, you know, do you, you know, the service you offer when you do the research, that's one service. It's not like I tell you, search ultra wide or search ultra deep, and you know, or is it basically one search or one type of search? It's a question, or that's that can be agreed with whoever you, whatever customer.
Yeah. So depending on the project, right? So, you know, we have four practice areas. Cyber is just one of them. Depending on what we're doing, if it's executive digital protection and if it's a full assessment, then we're looking everywhere. We're looking open source, social media, deep web, dark web. We're looking everywhere. So that's a very broad range, and it goes very deep. We're also using proprietary tools or our in-house tools that we've developed. So that's a huge part of taking this information and creating additional pivot points and identifiers that we can utilize to make sure that we're looking at not only, you know, what someone would look at if they just Googled someone and issued a couple of takedown requests. We're looking much, much deeper than that.
Okay. One question I had is, you know, we mentioned that a little bit before, is for all the sources you find, what type can you set up and kind of continuous monitoring? You know, when we find something, there is exposure from now on to be, you know, on top of things. So I guess you can set up monitoring services also, or do you do sampling points? I'm not sure how you operate.
Yeah. So depending on what we're monitoring for, you know, that's why, you know, I never approach someone or a situation and say, I've got a solution for you. If I don't know what the goal is or the problem, I don't know which solution to offer you, because there are so many. So if we're looking at someone's PII or their personally identifiable information, we're going to look at data aggregators. We're going to look at open source and search results. We're going to look at real estate websites, maps, those types of things. If we're looking deeper, if you want to know if someone's threatening your brand, your executives, anything like that, we're going to look at places like social media. We're going to look at Telegram channels, Discord channels, maybe foreign social media. If we're looking for imposter accounts, we're going to also look on all of those things, but we're going to be looking with a different lens. If the person is traveling, and let's say they're going to some type of conference or something, we're going to geolocate, right? We're going to look at all kinds of social media, not only for the individual and the brand, but maybe the other speakers that are going to be attending, so that we can make sure that if you're on a panel the same day as Elon Musk, your digital threat, you know, or your risks may be quite low, but just for proximity's sake, you may have just increased that red X on you because you're near someone who has a greater threat profile. So those types of things. And again, are we looking only for breach credentials? We're approached often by companies who've suffered a breach. So they'll come to us and say, we think we know the extent of the breach. We think we've paid the ransom or we've mitigated the threat, but we need you to monitor ongoing for instances of our data or intellectual property or credentials to show up on the dark web or any other place.
Makes sense. So I assume now we found the data, we made the study. I guess, you know, you mentioned before, we obviously want to improve the situation. One is to understand how the data is collected and also how it could be exploited. Both, I think, the collection and the exploitation will, I guess, be the inputs to, I don't know how to call it, an education package in some sense. You are going to actually dispense to the executive so he knows, okay, you know, if you do this, then this data can be collected, or this data already there can be used against you. Can you a little bit share how the education or the training, I don't know what you call it, or the awareness would look like?
So a lot of times someone will develop maybe habits that we would consider bad habits, like reusing their passwords or using guessable or simple passwords. And so in those particular cases, it's one thing for me to just, you know, talk to you and say, Gee, never do that. Never reuse your passwords. And you'll say, okay, Stephanie, I'll never do that. But when we're having a conversation and a debriefing with an executive, and it's clear that I can show them in, you know, 20 recent breaches that they've reused a password and it's been exposed, and they still may be actively using that on some of their active accounts, that's a bit of a jarring moment, because that person is like, oh, I'm busted. You know, they caught me doing the thing that I know better. And in that way, it kind of lets you have that open conversation and say, I totally get it. It is difficult, but this is one, the case for using unique, unguessable passwords. But also, because of the complexity with that, this is also a really good opportunity to bring up password managers and talk about why those make your life a little bit easier and help you create more complex and secure passwords as well.
I assume you deal with people who are, by their job or their role, their function, very busy people. And when you had this, you know, when you're very busy and you're thinking many things, sometimes you do not have the reflex and maybe the patience to actually do the right thing. So the training is almost like reflex training. I think it's awareness is one thing, but I think you almost in some cases have to go beyond awareness training. It's more thing that has to become normal, a reflex, and not something you have to be concentrated, even though you had a very busy day and, you know, now not so much energy left. How do you actually move from awareness to reflex? That must be the trick.
Yeah, I think part of it is, like I said, just exposing someone and telling them you see the thing that they're doing. You know, it's one thing to eat healthy, but you go to your doctor and he's like, I can tell you're not eating healthy, right? So in that way, when we have these conversations and people are exposed, I am a third party. I'm not a person they have to see at the office every day. I am a resource they can call, and they know this. And my executives all know this, that they can reach out and go, you know, hey, Steph, I got this email, or what do I do with this, or what password manager should I use?
When you become the security team at large.
I'm an external resource, right? So that they can actually feel like they have someone they can reach out to, that there are no dumb questions and we can have these conversations, but they learn how the information can be weaponized. And instead of creating this FUD principle, this fear and uncertainty and all of those things, we are trying to empower, right? My goal at the end of every interaction is to empower these people to do the good work that they do. They work very hard. They have very big jobs. So the goal is to make sure that I take care of the cyber stuff. I teach them good things and that they can go on and do the good work that they do and not have to worry about all this extra stuff and know that they've kind of incorporated a new lens to everything that they do. So instead of just passing at their cell phone to any person they meet, they're going to think about what we talked about and they're going to say, okay, I'm probably going to create a VoIP or some kind of burner, or I'll just give someone my LinkedIn versus giving them my cell phone, because this is probably not, I don't know this person well enough to give them this yet. The privileged access has not been yet earned.
But, one thing is themselves, and that's a starting point, but obviously, their family at large, I wouldn't even talk about their friends, but at least their family could also be targeted.
Or
a weak link could be created on that site because maybe he has teenage kids who, want to, explore the world. How do you also would do the research on them and would do the same training, or how do you do the extended view and the service around them?
Yeah, so absolutely. You're correct with that one, that I could have the best OPSEC in the world, but if I'm surrounded by people who overshare and who include me in that, who, mention my birthday and wish me happy birthday on social media and say, happy, 20th birthday and all of these things, I was generous there. But to put things out there in a very exposed way, this is a car, this is a license plate, this is our vacation we're on, this is, all of these other things. We try to train people when we're doing these debriefings to show them how the information can be weaponized, sharing their kids' birthdays, sharing locations, all of that kind of stuff. Pets' names, if you're going to share your pet and the pet's name, don't use it as a password question or a password recovery question. So to try to, you know, teach them about things like that. In addition, there are often times where I'm debriefing an executive and they'll say, this is really great information. I'm not sure it'll be well received coming from me. Would you be willing to debrief again and include my extended family? And I've debriefed groups of 15 plus people to include adult children and their families and their spouses. And we'll talk about it all. We'll see that, you know, the son and the daughter-in-law, you know, like to share a lot of information and kind of how that can be utilized to harm them as well as harm maybe our principal who, you know, may be with them somewhere or may be part of their circle. So we want to make sure that they understand that this exposure creates a vulnerability in their entire circle and you know, maybe go forward in a different way.
I mean, obviously, I imagine, and you hinted it before, now the data, I know what data is there. Some data is out there already. And you hinted that you could also, to some limit, to some extent, clean up the data. Is that something you do? And is there any great hope in that area? Or what you know, what can be done? Or is it,
yeah,
we just have to think about the future, but we cannot change our past. What is your approach there?
So it's both. Right. So some things we can change and some things we can't. And that's why the mental mindset has to kind of adjust because, you know, once information is breached and it's in the hands of a criminal, they don't respond to takedown requests. So that won't help us. I can't go on the dark web and opt out. It would be lovely if we could. But outside of that, you can look at things like data aggregators, real estate websites, maps, things like that. And even impersonator accounts. And we can look at those. We've spent a lot of time and energy perfecting those processes, developing great partnerships, and really, really trying to make sure that we have the ability to do this efficiently for these people. So that, I think, is a huge part of it, rather than just, again, with the fear, just giving them this wealth of information and say, wow, you've got a lot of exposure. This is horrible for you. Have a good day. Thanks for the cash. We want to make sure that we can actually help, right? In addition to taking down what we can, educating on what we can't take down, and changing the filter through which they interact with the digital world so that going forward, they're not creating as much exhaust for themselves that repopulates all of this. Because, you know, the whole entire point of monitoring is to suppress the repopulation. Because if we're taking it down and we do it one time, it will come back up.
Okay, makes sense. This obviously is a big effort on your side and is a big, you know, return of investment. And this situation exists maybe sometimes because of the role of the person. I am the executive, I am the CEO, whatever. Would the cost of this service be borne by the executive himself, or would it be even companies? Is it even, I guess, even tax deductible? You know, how does that work? Because it's somewhere in between personal and corporate. What is a typical situation?
Right. So in the majority of the cases, it's considered a duty of care for the company. Not only does it protect the executive and their family, but it also gives the company a lot of information. Even if, you know, there are a lot of situations where I debrief the principal and the executive team or the security team is only filled in on certain details that they've been asked to be filled in on. And the subject themselves retains their privacy. You know, they don't have to share everything. It really is up to the company. But knowing which breach credentials are out there and things like that, those are things that actually support their cybersecurity and their IT teams, make their CISO's job a lot easier because they know where the exposure is. They know who their offenders are so that they can kind of retire an email address if it needs to be retired, or they can offer additional training or support or you know, maybe another burner device or things like that just to help that person navigate a little bit more safely. So I think, you know, giving them this information really helps kind of make sure that it's a broader protection for more than just the individual as far as that, there are situations in which the executive would pay for it themselves. A lot of that just depends on how they want to structure things, if it's part of a broader IRS justification for a security budget.
Sure.
That kind of gets into a little bit more tax code and other prerequisites and things like that. But those are options as well when it's considered a perk versus a necessity.
Sure. Okay. I mean, we'll indicate in the show notes how to get in contact with Prescient to find out more and to your case and obviously your services and maybe obviously the price tag. Obviously you overlap a little bit whole threat intelligence area, but on the other hand, it seems like Prescient is quite unique in its focus on the executive. The question I have is there any competition yet out, or are you the lonely pioneer in that area? how does that?
So the short answer is yes and no. So my team and I are one of the very first to develop what our version of executive digital protection looks like. It is extremely unique to us. It uses proprietary tools that we've developed in-house. We look for a certain skill set in our team to make sure that they can get the type of information that we're looking to incorporate into these assessments. And they're incredibly thorough, very comprehensive, sometimes upwards of 150 to 200 pages long. So in that way, it's very unique in the space, and there is no comparison for it. In addition to, you get me and you get my debriefings and me as a resource. So that's unique as well. Other companies, they're doing similar things in that they're trying to help you digitally, but they're doing it in different ways. And it's all very important to make sure that your home network is secured, to make sure that you have some high level awareness for traffic or maybe some breach credentials. These are all really lovely things and helpful things to have. But to do it the way we do it, we're leading the charge. It is considered the gold standard.
Well, I should congratulate you for having built that business in this way. And I think it serves a very important function. And it will become more important as you go on. I think that takes us to the end of this conversation. And I would like to thank you clearly for having shared with us this service and this pioneering new area in threat intelligence. I hope this will become a natural reflex for a number of people to actually give themselves personal protection versus only thinking about their company protection at large. So obviously, what people don't know about physical protection, but I think the digital protection is equally as important. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.
Thank you. And also to remind everybody, we have soon, hopefully, we'll have another video looking at Stephanie's career and as a leader in women in cybersecurity. So I'm already looking very much forward to that. And great to have you and talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.